I'm Christine Dean, and this is live from Studio A. And joining us today, we have a woman who's been here before as part of other groups, but I don't know that you've ever been here solo. It's Galen Lee. Welcome, Galen.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure. And you have done a lot of work with some... Is it all duos? That's what I have in my head, is that you've done pretty much a lot of duos.
Mostly duos. Snowboarding turned into more than a duo for the last half of Snowboarding's life.
Right. So she's in Murder of Crows, Snowbarn, and The Get Arounds, which is with Dan Dresser. And you're performing, but you've done a solo album now, and you're performing tonight at Choice Unlimited's Masquerade Ball fundraiser, which is happening at the Gray Salon Ballroom, and then tomorrow night at Carmody in Duluth, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to have you start with a song, and then we'll come back and talk about this switch to doing a solo album and how that came about, and we'll hear more about that. What do you want to start with here?
I'm going to start with a song that's not on the album, actually. It's called Someday We'll Linger in the Sun.
All right.
So.
Someday we'll linger in the sun.
That is Galen Lee live from Studio A. And what was the name of that one again?
Someday We'll Linger in the Sun.
Ah, I love that title. Is that one of your originals?
Yeah, it is. It's actually going to be on the next The Murder of Crows recording.
Oh, okay.
But it's a song I wrote. It's the most recent one I've written. And I also figured out how to do it solo just because I like being able to sing it in different contexts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But usually Alan plays guitar and sounds a lot different with the guitar.
And Murder of Crows is one of your duos. That one's with Alan Sparhawk.
Yep.
So that's great that you guys are working on another album as well.
Yeah.
I think I heard you say somewhere that you're not a prolific writer. You don't write a lot of songs. Is that true?
Yeah. To be totally honest, I started playing violin when I was 10. And I kept going all the way through. I always considered myself primarily a violinist and a fiddler. And so when I started joining bands, it was always really a secondary instrumentation. And then I realized how much I liked to sing. So then I started doing harmonies. And then, you know, a couple of years later with Andy Gable, he talked me into playing or singing a couple like lead songs, but it was always cover songs. So not till I met Alan did I ever actually write any songs at all. And then I started writing a few here and there, and I think maybe I've done like 9 or 10 now, which is so small compared to some people that I know who write like hundreds of songs. But it's just the instruments is really my primary voice, I guess. But then once in a while something comes along, pops into your head, and you write it down. And I've been really happy with all the songs I've written, but I don't feel like I can force them or that they're always coming to me all the time, like some people talk about.
But it is something that you feel inspired about at a certain point.
Oh, for sure.
Like the inspiration comes first. It's not you saying, I really should write a song.
No, it's weird. Every time I write a song, it comes in the middle of something else. So one song, Birdsong, that's on the Murder of Crows album, that came to me when I was trying to take a nap. And Let It Go came to me when I was riding home on the bus one day. And this song that I just sang came to me in the shower. And it's usually a snippet of something where I'm like, oh. But then the rest flushes itself out in, you know, a matter of, like, in some cases, Let It Go, I wrote it in one day. And this song took a lot longer because it took me a while to piece together the parts. But but it's always an inspiration that hits, like, out of nowhere. And then I'm like, oh, I actually have another song that's brewing that way right now, that I thought of the part that I'm going to use that I know will be in my next song, but it just hasn't fully developed. So it's an inspired process, so that's really cool. Like, I feel very grateful for that. But it's also something I totally haven't figured out how to harness in, like, I'm going to sit down and write some more music. And maybe that's just practice or getting more used to it, because I'm pretty new to doing it. I think it's only 5 years that I've ever really written my own stuff, so.
And when you first started playing violin, it was classically, right?
Yep, I started in orchestra in fifth grade because we got out of school to take a music listening test. And so I did that, and I did really well. So they were like, well, let's figure out a way for you to be able to play, because my arms and legs are so short that I couldn't play it the normal way. So I had a really nice and open-minded teacher who worked with me, and together we figured out I could play it up and down like a cello. And so I started doing that, and I played classically all the way through high school, and I loved it. And then in college, I got into fiddle music. And so then I really did a lot with Celtic and traditional fiddle music, and then started playing with bands, starting with Andy Gable and then with Ariane.
And you know, I'd forgot about Andy. Because it was Galen and Gable, right?
Yep. Gable and Galen, really. Because he was the primary songwriter. Well, the only songwriter. He wrote all the songs. And so we would learn some fun covers. It was such a fun band. I miss him. He lives out in Wyoming now. But we keep in touch. He's engaged. So,
congratulations,
Andy. Yeah, it's
Andy.
Pretty cool. So it's been fun because he would come over and we'd learn a bunch of his songs and cover songs and have a couple of beers, and it was very relaxed. And that was my introduction to live music, so I'm grateful for that because it was a pretty fun group to be a part of.
Yeah. Well, and since then, as you said, you've gone on to do Murder of Crows and then Snowbarn with Ariane.
Yep. Norgard.
Norgard, right. And then the duo as well with Dan. And but now you have a solo album out. So tell me about that. What made you decide that you wanted to do something solo?
Well, a few years back, so I met Alan Sparhawk in 2011. And in about 2012, he gave me my own looping pedal. Because in The Murder of Crows, he actually does the looping. And I just listen to what he's doing, and then I play off of that, which is totally different part of your brain. But he gave me a pedal and said, I really think you should learn how to do this. Someday you could do shows by yourself. And I remember laughing and being like, that's ridiculous. I will never play a show by myself. But as it turns out, I really liked looping. And so I kind of started practicing with fiddle tunes that I already knew because they're usually pretty repetitive chord structure-wise. And so I realized that it worked, and so I booked a weekly gig at Bulldog Pizza and decided that that would be the time that I learned how to really master the art of looping. So I started doing it, and as the year went on, it's still there twice a month or whatever, but as the year went on, I realized that I think I could probably record an album of these songs because they are different. I mean, I know a lot of people play traditional tunes, but using a looping pedal makes them a lot more atmospheric.
And for people that might not be familiar with that, I think we've had some loopers in here before.
Yeah.
But explain a little bit about what that is for anybody that might not be familiar with it.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a little box that plugs into your violin, and then after that goes into your amp, and you press a button and it records what you play. The particular looper that I use only records for up to 90 seconds, so it's a limited set of notes, right? And then when you let go of the button, it just starts looping it and playing it again and again. But the cool part is you can push the button again later whenever you feel ready to and add another layer and another layer. And that's how I played the song that you just heard. And all my songs.
Right. So you lay down a foundation,
yep,
and then you start playing something else over that foundation. And if you decide you want to record that too, and then you can play.
Yeah,
so
it's really fun.
One person, but it sounds like many things happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And it's always different. Like there's never, you know, you never play a song exactly the same, really, because mm-hmm. the loops get captured a little differently. It's really fun. So that's kind of how the solo album came about, and started booking some more solo shows and got more comfortable playing by myself. I was really scared at first, but now I really like it. It's mm-hmm. a different feeling. I think I'd like to do more collaboration in the future, obviously, still. But solo is fun, too.
And it kind of adds another option to your musical career.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to wait until somebody else is free. Alan Sparhawk, for example, who's a very busy
very
man.
Very busy man, yep. Yep.
So you don't have to wait until, you know, he has a gap in time to work with you. You have something that you can do on your own.
Yeah, I'm actually planning to play a Midwest tour in July. So I'm like setting up shows, hoping to get to Wisconsin and Minnesota, obviously, and then perhaps Iowa and Michigan and hopefully Chicago. And so I would not probably be able to do that very easily in a project. You know, Alan has a weekend here or there, but touring hasn't been something that we've done a lot of talking about. And just as a matter of practicality, it's nice to be able to set up a show, and if it's only you, it's not such a big deal if it's not a huge turnout out of town or something. So it should be a pretty affordable tour, and mm-hmm. I'm really excited to try it because I've mm-hmm. never done that before. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, great. The only thing I miss from having you solo is that in most of the duos I've seen you in, you have great banter with the other person.
I know, and that's the one thing I miss. Although, you know what I realized is you can do banter with the audience.
That's true.
I had never thought of that until Homegrown last year, and the show is like a magical little coffee shop show, and the audience was right there, and it was such... Everybody, including myself, I thought maybe it was just in my head, but everybody there said the vibe was just very, like, communal and very supportive, and it was really fun. And that was the first time I realized, like, oh, that's probably why people like playing solo, because until then I felt so like alone kind of. And then when you realize you can connect directly with the audience, it's a different feel. But they're both fun. I mean, I miss banter too sometimes, gotta say. It's fun.
What do you want to play next?
Maybe I'll do one of the fiddle tunes, just because that's what we that's what I made the album out of mostly. And so I think I will play the traditional tune Soldier's Joy, and then I'll probably mix it up with another tune called Liberty, so because you can mix and match. Let me get my making sure my volume is back up. It's the key. Okay. Thank you.
That is Galen Lee live from Studio A, and that's one that's included on your album, right?
Yep, on your album.
I forgot I turned the vocal mic down.
Is on the album. It's a traditional tune that I learned from Terrence Smith. You know how Sir Ben's has that old time jam on Thursdays in college. I went to a lot of those, and so most of the tunes on the album that are traditional fiddle tunes I learned from the people at Sir Ben's.
Okay.
Many years ago.
How did you decide which ones were going to end up? And the album is called All the Roads That Lead Us Home. I can't remember if we said that or not yet.
Oh, I don't think so. Good point.
How did you decide which songs to include on the album?
Well, I have a list of about 35 songs that I play regularly at Bulldog Pizza. And, because it's a two-hour gig, so I play pretty much everything I know. And those 13 that ended up on the album, 11 of them were just songs that I felt really comfortable with and that I thought were different enough from each other, because I kind of want the album to have a ebb and flow but not sound all the same. And so they were a big variety. And then there was a few other ones that I recorded as medleys, and I only maybe put like half of the medley on there. I ended up doing a Shokin Farewell, but on the recording, A Sacred Heart, before that I played Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but I decided to just cut it down because I wanted to make the songs not too long either. So it's kind of just the process of playing around. But yeah, those 13 songs, I wasn't going to have any vocal tracks, so originally it was going to just be 11 tracks. But then I realized might as well try to record them because I'm at Sacred Heart, and how often do I get to do that kind of thing? And when I heard the vocal tracks, I realized I thought they probably should go on there too. So it's 11 traditional fiddle tunes and two singing songs.
And one of them is your original composition, Let It Go.
Yep. Which is originally that was on The Murder of Crows. It's pretty different, I think, than the version that The Murder of Crows put out back in 2012. So, and then the other one is a traditional American tune called Red Rocking Chair that I learned. I heard Kyle Ola play it a few years back, and I was just instantly like, wow, I love that song. It's so pretty. So I figured out how to loop that one, too.
So. Oh, okay. So that's the album, and you made it at Sacred Heart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you record there with Murder of Crows as well?
Nope, Murder of Crows was in my living room, but Snowbarn was at Sacred Heart.
Oh, right,
so,
right, okay.
And originally I'd hoped to work with Eric Swanson, but he had, you know, he was sick, and so I ended up talking to Jake Larson, but it went really well. He's super easy to work with, and he and I worked really well together, so it came out really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I recorded in just one afternoon. It was 5 hours. Very long 5 hours, and then it was done though. Mm-hmm. And so we got to mix it after that, and that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty straightforward project.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different than recording with another person. That's something I hadn't really thought about, is how much faster it would go,
because mm-hmm.
it's just the one thing to work on, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you were in and out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Another thing that you do is you're an advocate for people with disabilities.
Yep.
Because you have a disability yourself.
Yep.
I was reading on your blog, I think it was, you were saying that this year kind of one of your goals was to speak up more about
yep.
those sorts of things. Tell me a little bit about that and how that's been manifesting.
It's been interesting. So the last year or so I started thinking about, I decided to sign up for the Public Health and Human Services Conference about the importance of compassionate communication between caseworkers and their consumers. And so because it's pretty hard having a disability and going through the system, it's a lot of you have a lot of work to do, a lot of paperwork to get the services that you need, and so compassion goes a long way in that field. So I did that presentation, and I realized that a lot of the people's feedback was that they had never thought of any of this stuff before. And I kind of, my disability is pretty normal to me, but I realized that it is a really under-discussed topic. Equality for people with disabilities just isn't talked about in the same way that other minority groups might be discussed. And so I started advertising that I did public speaking, and people have hired me to do that. And so I give talks about different kinds of disability awareness issues. Compassion's a big one, but then also what kind of barriers are still out there for people, employment barriers and transportation barriers, and just societal attitudes are behind, I think, for disabilities more than a lot of other groups in our country still. And then, you know, in just in my own personal life this year, I'm raising some awareness about transportation barriers, because if you have a wheelchair and you don't drive in the winter, it's really hard to get around in Duluth. It's not very well shoveled, and the services for you are doing the best they can, but they're very limited. And so just to raise some awareness about that on a personal level has been important for me. But more, it's been really fun to share my perspective and view on disabilities with people who work in the field but maybe haven't experienced a disability themselves, because it's pretty eye-opening. And it's, you realize everybody has some kind of a message to share probably, but you maybe don't find out what it is right away. Mm-hmm. So I just assume people, I don't know, maybe knew more about it than they usually do. So mm-hmm. It's been really fun to share and rewarding. And then I always play at the end, violin and sing, usually at the end of every speech. So it's kind of a nice way to connect with the people there too. So,
I was thinking the music world isn't really set up very well for people with disabilities.
Oh yeah, that's
as
a
well.
Whole other one I didn't even mention.
Well, and that's kind of how I'm thinking about it in terms of your music career.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we're doing this interview here, you talked earlier about learning to play the violin and that you had to adapt mm-hmm. how you played. And a lot of people might not have even thought about that. They might have said, "Oh well, you just can't do it." So but you said you had a teacher that
was super
made
awesome.
It happen.
Yep, Susan Sommerfeld. She mm-hmm. was great. And later I worked with Warren Friesen and Rudy Perot, and they were all just really helping me to be the best that I could be. I mean, I don't think, there are some differences in the way I play. I don't use my fourth finger, which a lot of people use just because of the angle of my hand, and my bow is smaller. It's a half-size bow. So there's some, I guess, what you would call limitations, but I just feel like you get good at what you can do, and you get as good as you can at what you can do, and sometimes that's all you need to do, you know?
Right.
Keep working, and I'm going to obviously keep practicing and hope to improve even more. But I think focusing on what you can do is important. And then in terms of the music world too, you know, stages usually aren't accessible. Lots of venues don't have real accessible bathrooms. There's a lot of barriers. And then not only that, but you're like the only one. I mean, I don't know any other musicians personally that have physical disabilities. I know there's, you know, people are starting to talk more about mental health and music, which I think is great and really important. But I know there are other people who care about music with disabilities, but it's not talked about. So in a way, I don't want to say it doesn't feel welcoming, but you know, it's like you're a pioneer all the time.
Right.
And that gets kind of intense. So I just really want to spread awareness about that too, so that people who are booking shows or working in the radio, I think it's really cool that you had me on, because it's, you know, it's like they're out there. It's just that you might not see it all mm-hmm. the time, because mm-hmm. it's harder to find ways to be involved. I mean, with transportation barriers, I can't get out to Superior after 8 unless I have a ride, you know, because of the bus system and stuff. Mm-hmm. So even just planning shows takes a lot of work, and that's okay. But the more that people know that there are people interested in pursuing the arts, even though they have disabilities or regardless of the disability, maybe making an effort to reach out and make sure they're included in the same way that we do, like diversity and women in music. I think, you know, people want to reach out to them, which is awesome too. But mm-hmm. there's this whole, you know, 20% of the population has some sort of disability, so it's not a small group of people.
Right. And as you said, it's a little tougher when you're a pioneer, but now there are people that are seeing you.
And I'm hoping
that you do
can help. Yep. Mm-hmm. I really want to encourage other people to do, you know, what they want to do too. And, you know, even though it maybe takes a little more upfront work, it always gets easier, because as I've told lots of people, it's weird at first because people haven't seen it before. But then once they see it, they realize that it's doable. That's a big reason I'm planning this tour, actually, is because I think a big misconception about disabilities is it's really so hard to travel that you wouldn't ever want to do it. But I do want to travel, and so I'm going to make it happen, and so that hopefully other people can dream big enough to do that kind of thing too, if that's what they really want to do.
And I've always had that impression of you, Galen, that you'd make it happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, I'm going to do it.
You're a person that makes it happen.
Yep. I'm trying, and you know, that's good. I have a really supportive family and ton of friends that are super awesome, so it's not like I'm doing it all by myself either, of course. I need support, and I'm lucky to have a lot of love in my life, which is great. So if I can make it easier for maybe the next generation of kids with disabilities to get involved in the arts the way that they want to, you know, especially, yeah, having open-minded teachers is really big. So if you're a teacher out there and you have a kid who you're like, I don't know, just try to let them see what they can figure out with you, because it's my career. That's the crazy part. It turned into my career. So
the music?
Yeah. I mean, not only did she just not say, oh, no, I don't think that will work, she helped me figure it out, and then later it's what I do for a living. So it's kind of, it's cool that she was so open-minded. I'm sure she had no idea where that would lead, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we have time for one more. What do you want to finish up with here?
I will do, maybe I'll do Let It Go. Is that cool? Okay, that's on the album. It's track number 4. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. And this is the song that you, wrote that's on the album.
Yep. The smoke clears, when the dust settles, where do you go? Who do you know? When the damage is done and it blots out the sun, to whom do you run? To whom do you run? Let your the need to know, stay awake through the flow, and let yourself let it go.
That is Gaylin Lee live from Studio A in the original composition that's included on her new album, All the Roads That Lead to Home, Lead Us Home. Came out a few months ago, right?
Yep, November 2015.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming in. And you're playing tonight at Choice Unlimited's Masquerade Ball Fundraiser, which sounds like a heck of a lot of fun.
It is.
That's at the Gray Salon Ballroom, and it starts at 7. What time are you on?
I'm actually going to be doing the intro music, so 6:30 to 7:30 is when I'm playing.
And then you're playing tomorrow night at Carmody in Duluth. And
next Friday at Beaner's as well, on the 4th.
Okay.
So, yeah, a lot of shows coming up.
And tomorrow night's show starts at 9, I believe.
Yep, perfect. Right. Yep.
And if people want more information about you, you have a website, violinscratches.com, right?
Yep.
Yep. Love that name.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Gaylin. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Mike Nowitzki, Aaron Welch, and Cheyenne Vavrina. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.